are now entering the starting block. Creative talk to inspire you on the race to your next project. This is a podcast for people who want to make stuff by people who make stuff. What's good, y'all?
What is good, y'all? Welcome to episode one of The Starting Block. I'm the host of the show, Swain Hunt. And even though my background is with visual arts, comics and animation, illustration and movies, and being a fan of all that stuff, today, for this inaugural episode, I want to talk about words, specifically words in the form of great advice. One thing that's unique and singular about great advice is not the content of the message, and it's certainly not about the messenger, but what shape are you in to receive the message? Are you open? There's a saying, every now and then a person's mind is stretched by a new idea or concept, and the mind never goes back to its former state. And that's what great advice tends to do. Now, my own advice story comes via my buddy Dwight. Actually comes via an art teacher that he had in college named Laurie Jean Mulheron. And Dwight's told me this story many times, but I remember the first time he shared it because it hit me right square between the eyes. Laurie Jean told Dwight in the class, "Don't make a habit of incompleteness." Once again, when I first heard those words, a bell went off in my head, you know, like the Cologne Cathedral. That advice was given to Dwight and the class, but it was meant for me. And probably because I'd never heard it stated quite that way. Keep in mind, you know, since I was a teenager drawing and painting and trying to make things, my life at times has been a virtual crime scene of unfinished projects and tasks. And I still struggle with that even today. I started a music podcast last year and only put out one episode. And I can make excuses as to why that happened, but it doesn't really matter. I did not finish. And that's why I constantly reflect back on those words, "Don't make a habit of incompleteness." And we have all been there. You get together with a group of friends or collaborators and everyone is super excited about a project and it looks good on paper. And for whatever reason, you don't finish. Or you get an assignment from an editor or an art director, get overly committed to other jobs and nothing. Or you take a commission with the very best of intentions and you get distracted by, you know, other work or Netflix or binging on Game of Thrones or whatever it is. It doesn't even matter. It happens and it's going to happen. But the key to Laurie Jean's sage advice is don't do it repeatedly. If you're a professional, of course, it could hurt your reputation, but really it's just a waste of creative time. Henry Rollins says you don't have extra time or spare time. You only have lifetime. Go. So let's all pay attention when Laurie Jean tells us, don't make a habit of incompleteness. All right, for this special topic, I brought in some friends to help me do the heavy lifting, the squad, if you will, and they are a stellar group. First up is my buddy Dan DeSantos. Dan is an illustrator, he's a teacher, he is the founder of Muddy Colors, so he's the guy that invited me to this party. And here is some advice that Dan wanted to share that he got from a colleague many years ago.
I think the best art advice I ever received was actually career advice from a friend of mine who's an artist representative. And he once told me, you can't successfully negotiate a job unless you're willing to lose that job. That the power to say no is the most powerful tool in an artist's toolkit. And it's true. Every time I've put it to the test, it's worked out amazingly well. Whenever a job comes along that I don't particularly need because my schedule is too full or whatever, I use that job as an opportunity to just make demands, to kind of ask for things I don't normally ask for, because quite honestly, I don't care if they say no. And sure enough, 100% of the time, that has paid off incredibly well. I think a lot of artists maybe are underpaid because they allow themselves to be underpaid, and learning to make demands is kind of an important aspect. But in order to do that successfully, you really truly have to be okay with saying no or losing that job when you make that demand, that the demand is in fact that, a demand.
One of the things I love about what Dan has to say here is it reminds me of something that my grandmother used to say, which is, Butch, if you don't ask, you don't get. You have to open your mouth. My family used to call me Butch when I was little. But if you don't ask, you don't get. And that is so vitally important to remember when you are negotiating for a job. Next up is my friend Erica Peterman. Erica is a writer. She's a wonderful writer. She's also an editor, and she is one of the founders over at the Girls Gone Geek blog. And the advice Erica wanted to share goes back to her days as a plucky young reporter.
My name is Erica Peterman, and I've been a professional writer and editor for almost 25 years. I also started studying and writing fiction a few years ago, so there's this weird dynamic of knowing exactly what I'm doing at work and then being a complete amateur in this other world. I'm learning what I don't know about writing, and there is a lot I don't know. It's humbling, but in the best possible way. I can't say I've had a single Yoda to Luke moment that instantly changed my approach to creativity, but the best advice I've received about doing creative work has always been about doing the work. My first job right out of college was as a newspaper reporter, and journalism is all about deadlines. If I had a story that was due at 4 o'clock, my editor expected a complete article at 4 o'clock, not an article in progress at 4:30. And it needed to be properly researched and accurate, down to the dog's name. I got to spend a few weeks working with one of the best editors at the paper, and like a typical 20-something overachiever, I was heavily invested in impressing him. And at some point, I asked him how I was doing. He gave me an answer I didn't want. He said, and I'm paraphrasing, "Erica, you're a hard worker with good ideas, but you get stuck spinning your wheels on a lot of stories." And, you know, I'm nodding and asking him to elaborate, even though I really don't want him to. But he dropped some knowledge that has stuck with me ever since. And now I'm quoting him almost verbatim. "Some stories are worth laboring over and some aren't. If you're writing an article about the annual citrus parade, just crank it out. Don't sit there for 2 hours like, I'm going to write the best goddamn citrus parade story ever. Get it done and move on." He wasn't giving me license to be lazy or sloppy. He was telling me to get the work finished. He was telling me to spend my time wisely so I could meet deadlines and save energy for stories that were truly meaningful. And that has saved me a million times in my writing life. It might not sound like it has much to do with art, but no matter how joyful or magical a creative practice might be, it is work. I found that hard to accept when I started writing fiction, because I had this idea that it would be more about inspiration and epiphanies than learning a craft, showing up when I didn't feel like it, and finishing things. In other words, the work. The creative skills I developed when I was a kid, drawing, reading music, playing flute, were no different. I practiced over and over to become competent and even good. Finding the time is trickier now. I've got kids, laundry, and a million boring adult things to do. But when I don't make room for writing or push through the parts that seem impossible, I'm not very happy. I lose momentum. When I keep going, and when I least expect it, the work turns into joy.
The point that Erica is making here is so correct. Sometimes we can get fixated on trying to make awesome work and forget to work awesomely. Put your butt in the seat, put your hand to the canvas, the keyboard, hands in the clay, and make the stuff. It's what Stephen Pressfield calls a blue-collar approach to making art. It's not very sexy, but it is definitely effective. And finally is my friend Ian McCabe. Now, Ian is an illustrator, he's a concept artist, he's a writer, he's also a teacher. He's worked on films like The Avengers, The Force Awakens, Guardians of the Galaxy, and many, many more. Now, if you've never met Ian in person, Ian is all about imagination and story. That's what drives him, that's what excites him, that's what makes him tick. So, as you're listening to his great advice, You've got to listen to the end, because you go halfway through it, you're going to be wondering, where is he going with this thing? But that's key. Once you get to the very end, I promise you it will be just as sweet and as satisfying as anything. And you will probably be moved, just like I was the first time I heard it, and just like I kind of am now, even thinking about it. So here is Ian McCabe.
Hi, Swain. This is Ian McCabe. You asked us for a moment, someone gave us some great advice, and I've been really lucky over the years. I've had an awful lot of good advice from a lot of people. But I guess the one that really stands out is way back when. I was, gosh, I think around about 14 years old, and I was at school. And it would be a little bit before that even. But I woke up one day and just suddenly realized, it's time to fight crime. So I got my best friend and sat him down and told him it was time to start a secret service. Yeah, secret agents, drop boxes, secret martial arts, combat, you know, grappling hooks in your belt buckle, all that kind of stuff. And of course he just went along with whatever I decided we should do, so he sat down and wrote a really great rule book. Of course, every Secret Service needs one of those. And this one was thick as a telephone book, covered everything that could possibly happen to a secret agent. And then we were off and running. Went out, recruited some agents, took them off, gave them some training that I learned from a book. Actually, I had a book called How to Be James Bond. And by gum, we even solved a crime. Won't go into the details of that, but we were so darn successful, I think we scared all the bad guys away, and nobody ever committed any more crimes at our school. And that's not good when you've got a highly trained Secret Service, because your agents kind of get antsy. And one day I walked into the school, and there was that big rule book. It was stapled to all the walls, all the way up and down the hallways. So that was it. Mobilized our agents and tracked down the mole. It was one of our own guys that done it. So we pulled him into the annex and pulled out the rule book and realized that the penalty for treason was death. And that's when I realized I should disband the Secret Service. But I wasn't finished yet. So I went home and immediately wrote to the United States Secret Service, asked them for a job. And not long after that, I got a letter back. I actually still have it. A letter back from them on that beautiful headed note paper of theirs, asking me to report for testing a certain place and time. And my dad wrote back and said he can't come. He's got school that day. I was so embarrassed. But my mom took me aside, and that's when she gave me probably the best piece of advice I've ever got. She said, "Why don't you just write it down?" And that's when I started writing and drawing stories. And I've never stopped. Thanks, Ma.
That is Ian McCaig, my man. Thank you all for joining me on this very first episode of The Starting Block. I am super excited to be jumping back in the podcast game. Also scared shitless, but hey, I'm going to work through it. And I also want to thank my guests for joining me and helping me out, Dan and Erica and Ian. I really appreciate you all. If anyone out there has any suggestions for topics and what have you, you can forward them to thestartingblock@gmail.com, and that's block spelled B-L-O-Q. Or you can use the form on the Muddy Color site, and I'll get the information that way as well. And until the next episode, keep making stuff.